Welcome to Synthaholics. This is your host, David Duncan, and with me tonight is...
Holly Michelle.
You're not Aaron.
I am not Aaron.
Aaron done messed up.
You done messed up, Aaron.
He's becoming one with the last project he was working on. He will not be with us tonight, unfortunately. We hope you feel better. We hope you'll be able to split apart from that house you were working on.
I don't know. They never really figured it out.
No, they didn't. They didn't. They never really explained what happened to the rest of the things that happened at the end of the movie.
I thought it was so interesting, though, how they left it.
I'm not. I'm really pissed about how they left it.
Really?
Especially since the director, we'll get into it a little bit, but the director doesn't want to continue on with the rest of the adaptations of the books. So, in the spirit of Thanksgiving, we're going to talk about Annihilation tonight. And how does this fit into the spirit of Thanksgiving? You ask? Well, unfortunately, disease that brought over by the Europeans annihilated a lot of the Native American tribes. So, and you know, they also did it the old-fashioned way too. So, annihilation. Let's hold hands and come together in thanks.
In thanks. Now you done messed up.
I done messed up, David.
David.
Yeah. Well, it's just we're trying our hand at non-Star Trek things every now and then, and this is a more recent film. Aaron actually pitched this. I'm really sad that he's not feeling well tonight. So,
if he really wants to talk about it, maybe we shouldn't do it.
No, we're gonna go ahead and do it.
All right. Into the shimmer we go.
But as far as news, I didn't see anything too spectacular as far as Star Trek news goes this week, although hopefully we'll get some new tidbit, you know, soon this week. You know, maybe another trailer for Season 2 of Discovery. That'd be nice. Mm-hmm. Did you get to watch Calypso?
I did not. I had time. I forgot about it.
You did not watch it? Okay, because I talked about my thoughts about it last time. Aaron hadn't watched it. So gotcha. He didn't get their way on his thoughts. So I'm just wondering if you got to. So yeah, tonight's topic is going to be Annihilation, the Natalie Portman 2018 sci-fi film. It's like a sci-fi
thriller.
Thriller. It's like a more like a thinking person science fiction movie. It's not. It's very light on action. It's very interesting, kind of thought provoking, and it's a movie that I had to actually watch twice this week to kind of like appreciate
wrap
it more.
Your head around it. Oh, okay.
I did not like it on my first viewing. It was good. I was just like, I didn't have time to watch it 100% focused. So I had a bunch going on this week. So I was kind of like watching, I was doing other things. So I was kind of distracted. But by the end of the movie, it got way better. And so upon rewatching it, the beginning became a lot more interesting. Figuring out everything was fitting together.
Mm-hmm.
Did you watch it more than once or did you just watch it once?
Well, you know, I started it when I was moving across country and my phone died at the gym, so I couldn't finish it. So I watched the first half twice. So I don't know. I definitely would watch it again. It would be interesting to see if I pick up on other things.
I think it's a layered film. I think you do need to watch it a couple times.
Yeah?
I think so.
Well, you know, I have a tendency to, when I'm watching a film, I pay attention to like body language of the actors, and I don't know if I actually follow and enjoy the story as it comes or if I'm just constantly thinking ahead, but most of the time I'm just thinking ahead and I'm always curious, and if somebody looks a certain way, I'm like, oh, that's suspicious, and then my brain goes in a direction that I don't know if it should go. And then, so I probably should watch movies more than once. I'm not saying I don't, because I like to watch rewatch movies, but
I mean, some movies you should watch more than once, and some just aren't worth it. Like you know, like the Rogue One and The Last Jedi, they're not worth a second watch.
I mean, I don't know. I haven't watched them over yet.
I haven't either. I don't plan on it. Like, maybe in like a couple of years in the future, after all three of them are out, maybe I'll watch the entire trilogy. But that'll be, I don't know. It depends on how good episode 9 is.
Yeah. Well, I just had the opportunity to watch Solo yesterday, and I didn't because I didn't have time, but I'm interested to see how that one goes.
Oh, that one was good. That's my favorite of the Disney Star Wars movies so far.
Good. Good deal.
Yeah, so because it didn't make me angry. So big thumbs up to Solo for not making me angry.
Very nice.
So do you want to get into the Annihilation recap?
Yeah, why not? So, where to start? Obviously, it's a 2008 science fiction thriller.
18.
What did I say?
2008.
Oh. See, I'm in the shimmer, and I lost track of time.
You lost track of time?
I don't know.
It starts off with an alien dingleberry falling to Earth through a lighthouse.
Yeah, super interesting, too, because, like, you didn't know where it was going, because it was just, like, this meteor that hits a lighthouse, and then it just, like, creeps. There's just, like, this gooey, like, shimmery light that, like, comes out of the lighthouse and then cases the lighthouse. It's really neat. I thought it was really neat how they did that. I'm interested to see how it's described in the books, actually.
Yeah.
But yeah, it follows a group of military scientists who have to go into the shimmer and basically find out what is the cause of the shimmer and relay back to base. That's pretty much it. But the story centers around an ex-military, now biology professor, Lena, who is struggling to cope with the loss of her husband, Kane, who, also military, went on a mission a year ago and was reportedly killed in action. So,
MIA for a year.
Yeah. So she finds herself face to face with him in their bedroom, but it soon becomes apparent that he needs medical attention.
And he's not super aware. He's not able to answer questions very well.
Yeah. He doesn't know how he got there. You know, she asked, how did you get here? And he said, I was outside. And she says, outside where? Outside the house? And he's like, the room. And she's just like, what the fuck is going on?
And he doesn't have any details about the mission, about where he's gone for a year, or why he hasn't reached out to her. Like, he's got no answers for anything. But he just starts, like, coughing up blood, so.
Yeah, yeah, which is interesting. And on the way to the hospital, their ambulance is intercepted by what you assume is, like, a secret government agency.
Secret
and looking
agent
to attain
man.
Their assets. Secret.
Aaron, man. That's what Aaron's got a secret mission tonight. That's why he's not here.
That must be it. That must be.
He's got all that Section 31 work that I've been envying.
Has he been allowed to tell you about his Section 31 work?
Because
it doesn't seem like he should have been.
No. I'm just assuming he's doing Section 31 since he's not here.
Got you. So they collect Kane and Lena, and Lena finds out where Kane has been, and she talks to the person in charge, which is Dr. Ventress, who is, what is she? She's a psychologist, and she's the one who puts the team together, and she kind of tells Lena
about...
She's
the Nick Fury of the film.
She's the Nick Fury.
Except she goes on the mission.
She does. She goes on the mission. But basically, Lena's like, I'm a biologist. This is clearly something with his biology. Like, I should go in there to figure out how to save my husband. So she joins the team and they decide to dissect her. And, you know, they're like, oh, you're a biologist. Great. Come on in. And she doesn't tell them that Kane is her husband. And
I just don't understand how that's not known since they were brought in together and Ventress is with them. Like, why is she keeping that?
Well,
I mean, it becomes a point of contention later on, but it doesn't make any sense why it's kept secret.
I don't know that it would have been kept secret. Obviously, they recruit people all the time. You know, when Lena is talking to the group that she learns as the new team gearing up to go into the Shimmer, you learn that they all showed up at different times. And perhaps they just, you know, with Kane being such a big deal, since no one has ever returned from the Shimmer in the 30 years that they've known about this, you know, they weren't focusing on her. They were, you know, the buzz was about Kane. So, I mean, that's...
How'd they not get either of their last names? it seems silly.
I don't know if Lena and him have the same last name.
They didn't make that clear.
And, I don't know, but I know that Kane... Kane's last name is said in the movie, but I think it's only said when they are at the, I guess, the abandoned, it used to be a fort, the old fort.
Oh, in the video?
Yeah. I think you see Kane's last name then, or Kane might actually be his last name. I don't know. I don't remember what her last name is, but yeah, I don't know how they didn't pick up on it other than, you know, she obviously made the decision to omit the fact, so perhaps she didn't even have her last name on her. Maybe it was just Lena.
According to I'm looking up IMDb, Natalie Portman is Lena and Oscar Isaac is Kane. They don't reveal their last names aren't
last
on here,
names, right?
Which is stupid. Gina Rodriguez is Ava Thornison, and Tuva Nofati is Cass Shepard.
Yeah.
Why do the side characters have last names but not the main characters? That makes no sense. It's like they did that just to have drama show up later for no reason.
Well, I watched some of the special features for the film, and the writer of the book, when he started writing this, he didn't even have names for people. And he was having a hard time deciding what gender the team was going to be. And for a long time, they just didn't have names. So... I don't know. Maybe they didn't actually have first and last names in the books, and it was just a directorial decision.
Yeah, I don't know. I haven't read the books. I don't know if that the part where the flip out happens is the same, or if it's something completely different. It's a book, so it's probably different.
Probably just a little different. But yeah, she doesn't tell them that Kane's her husband, and I don't see a problem with it. I mean, especially for a grieving spouse, like, for the last year, your husband's been gone. For the last 6 months, you've considered him killed in action. You've considered him dead. Like, you don't know if he's going to wake up. That could have not, it might not have been a desire to lie or to omit the fact, but, you know, I guess psychologically speaking, it's,
so wouldn't Ventress have told them? I mean, she's, like, the leader of the group. She should, like...
Yeah, but she's also a psychologist, and... It was Lena's decision not to mention it, so she wouldn't. I mean, I don't know why, but she seems pretty laxed. You know, she's got a goal, and I don't think really she cares too much. And actually, and I don't know if I made this up in my head, but when I was watching this the first time, Dr. Ventress, she mentions that she handpicks her teams, and...
She likes fingering him.
No. She handpicks her teams.
Is that what handpicking is? No.
Well, my first thought when she said that she handpicks her teams was that, okay, so she actually let Kane go home to draw Lena out to recruit her for her team. That was my first thought. And I don't know if I made that up in my head, but I don't think that conversation actually happened in the film.
I feel like they were surprised that he was the out, so I don't think so.
Yeah, I don't know. For some reason, I mean, you watched it twice and you didn't remember that. So it probably
I had to watch it distracted twice. So I didn't get to give my whole attention to it twice, but I watched it twice as much as I could.
Yeah, well, my instinct was that Dr. Ventress let Kane go to the house so that she could recruit Lena. But anyway, they decide that she's on the team and they're going to go into the Shimmer. So did we kind of describe what the Shimmer was? So
it's basically a big bubble. It's the center is that lighthouse you mentioned before, and it's like it's growing year by year, and they're worried it's going to take over the entire world if it hasn't stopped.
Yeah, there's this, so something strikes the earth and it begins to emit a force field that the government named the Shimmer, and it's been steadily expanding over the years, and that's where her husband went, and
nobody
until Kane. So
when they walk into the Shimmer, it just jumps forward to like a dream sequence, or it's a flashback. Natalie Portman's character, Lena, has lots of flashbacks to different points in the past year, or actually it's before the past year. Sometimes she has thoughts of her husband. Sometimes she has thoughts of her infidelity with a colleague.
I found it very interesting, and it was actually really confusing to me. But yeah, the director has all these flashbacks and throughout the film, and when she walked into the Shimmer, you see what could be a flashback, but then she wakes up and she's intent. And she's like, nobody has any recollection of after they walked through the boundary. And they checked their food rations and they'd been there for like a week and a half.
At least several days, yeah.
Yeah, and it was odd to me that the flashback happened there, almost like she was consciously remembering it, but that's probably some of like the psychosis that goes on in the film. But probably. Yeah, the whole film has a lot of back and forth flashbacks, and I thought it was interesting, but I didn't really understand the point of it.
That's interesting. Yeah, I don't drama?
Maybe there wasn't one, but you know,
is drama the point?
While this is taking place, you're actually witnessing the past. The present in the film is that Lena is sitting in a room in quarantine, and she's being asked how she, you know, what happened, what her account of the Shimmer was, and
because she's the second person to ever come out,
and she's coherent.
Yes.
So,
but also in these flashbacks, the present time, where they're talking to her, she's also not super great at answering questions, just like her husband was.
Yeah, yeah, she's missing pieces, but actually, you know, when you listen to the questions that they're asking for someone who's kind of analytical, their questions aren't really answerable. I mean,
is it a carbon-based life form? I don't know. I didn't touch it. I didn't analyze it. I didn't get a chance to.
Exactly.
But she also just said, I don't know. She didn't expand upon that. She's like, I don't know.
She does know.
It's like a teenager. She sort of sounds like a teenager, like when she's getting questioned.
Face-to-face interaction. Well, anyway. Anyway, let's not skip ahead. Skip ahead, skip ahead. So they wake up from the camp and they're like, all right, we got to move. And they find that they find this beautiful, almost like a grove, but it's really not. Actually, the grove is later, but it's like there's a pond and some beautiful fencing. And there are all these flowers, a multitude of flowers on this same vine. And Lena is examining it and she's like, it's very interesting. There are a number of flowers and it's the same vine. It's very, very peculiar. And
it should not be possible.
It should not. It should not be possible. And then so Josie, she is checking out this nice little, you know, cabin on the swamp and like gets dragged into the house and they go in and they, you know, props to Lena. She just dives right in the water and she goes and pulls Josie out and they all run to the shore and this alligator comes crawling out of the house and back into the swamp and comes and attacks them on land. And I loved...
I was expecting an octopus because Shepard wasn't hurt. I mean, I'm sorry, not Shepard. Josie wasn't hurt.
Yeah.
And like, if it was an alligator, it seems like she should have like some wounds, some puncture wounds, but it was kind of weird that it pulled her without injuring her.
I had a similar thought, and my reasoning is that it had her backpack, but...
It grabbed her with a lead. I mean, we don't saw where I grabbed her from. She just like flew back.
Yeah, well, you can see her feet come off the ground and she's pulled back by the center of her, like her midsection. Mm. I mean, that's obviously rigging, but yeah, her pack's missing when she comes out. And so that's my reasoning.
Oh, okay.
But my other thought is I'm not sure if the alligator would want the human flesh or the rations in the bag more. Do you know what I'm saying? So
pretty sure they're not can openers.
It's true that.
Also, it's got shark DNA, so it's probably going after her.
Well, yeah, that's very true. But aren't sharks more scared, and that's why they lash out?
No, sharks usually lash out because if you're on top of the water, you're food to them because they sea lions and stuff like that. It's like float on top of water, so they just like attack whatever on top because it's like it's my fish flakes. It's floating on top. It must be good to eat.
Well, the gator attacks them on land, and Lena takes it down. And I was so proud of that scene. It was done really well, and I really liked it. It was very exciting. And they examine it, and they again discover that this gator has
concentric rows of teeth.
Mutated. It's not crossbred, but it's just continued to grow more things and had attributes of other animals, and it was very, very strange. So
it's kind of funny. Someone's like, "Did they crossbreed?" I'm like, "How would you crossbreed a shark and a crocodile? That's the weirdest." Mm-hmm. Like, I don't understand how that sex would work.
I don't know.
Can you draw us a picture, Holly?
I cannot, and I won't even try.
Oh, come on, make it work.
But they pick up and they move on, and they get to basically an old fort that has long since been encompassed by the Shimmer, and they find that the previous team, Kane's team, that was one of their checkpoints, and
they discover
the Kane's team leaves them a
memory card.
You know, it's almost like a. It was very helpful. It wasn't meant to scare them, but it was very, very disturbing. So,
well, everyone's whacked out of their mind.
Yeah.
And the carbon door in someone's stomach, like he's Krang.
Well,
they're trying to free Krang.
They have to make it very clear of what's going on. So basically, they look at this memory card, and it's this guy in a chair, and Kane takes his, you know, his, like, K-bar, and slices a chunk out of his abdomen and opens his abdomen, and it's like almost door. Like eels. His intestines have turned to winding eels and are just, like, moving around, and it's funny to me.
His fingers in between them, and they're just writhing around his hands.
Yeah. It's funny to me that they weren't able to speak to the camera and say, like, this is why we're showing this to you. There's something going on in all of our bodies. It didn't specify whether this man had touched something that caused the issue or ate something that caused it, or if he was, like, attacked by something that caused it. They literally just say nothing except for all the screams. So,
and then they're just like, hey, let's cut a door into somebody just because. Let's see what happens.
Well, I'm curious to know, like, what. So anyway, after they see this camera, that after they watch the memory card.
It's a trick of the light. No one said anything weird.
They go find somehow. Dr. Ventress just knows where to go, and she walks into this old abandoned pool, and she sees the body of the guy. And it's so interesting because basically from the waist up, he begins to morph into random things. It's almost coral reef-like in the way that, like, things branch out, but his spine is, like, completely stretched out. And you can see his skull at the top has been ripped from the top of the spine, and it's just, like, grew up the wall. And I'm curious how long that took because of the next scene when they're in the actual field. But then they're freaked out, and they're like, all right, we got to take night shifts. And during this time, Dr. Ventress is on watch, and Lena can't sleep, so she goes to talk to her, and they hear something. Well, turns out it's a bear.
It's a skull bear.
And it attacks Shepard and takes her away. And so the next morning they go out looking for her. And we don't really know if this is just, like, the next morning or not, because obviously they lost so much time in the beginning. They may just not have talked about it a second time. So they go, and Lena's like, you know what? I will go find her. You guys stay here. So she comes back, and she's like, yeah, she's dead. I saw her body. Yeah. And what's her name? Thornson? Anya? She does not believe that Cass is dead. And she's pissed and she's grieving. But they, you know, they get to that little meadow and they see all of these shapes.
Of people.
Of, yeah, humanoid shapes that are in the field and they've literally grown into the ground. And Cass, I don't know, Cass is the one that dies. Josie is like, I think we've been looking at this all wrong. You know, the shimmer is basically like a crystal and it's refracting things. And I think that's why, you know, our radio signals can't get out. And so they come to the conclusion that not only is the strange force field that encompasses them is reflecting the radio waves and keeping them contained, but it's also
refracting all DNA.
Refracting DNA onto other DNA. So whatever you're around, you basically become. So, you know, I'm curious what the bear was around, but
he was hanging around some skulls. Maybe he was maybe he was on the beach hanging out with those skulls.
It was bizarre that it was basically a dead thing, but they realized that these people turned into plants because they lived in this grove, and you know, the gator just took on traits of other reptilia.
Sharks or fish, but
well, I don't know how it got the shark. I mean,
it doesn't seem like a
gators
swamp.
Roam, and the ocean is at this point a 3 or 4 days walk.
Yeah, I'm not sure how
so
that merged.
I don't know, but so they figure that out and get to their next checkpoint where they are sleeping, and
Lena's rudely awoken.
Yeah, Anya goes nuts and knocks Lena out, and like
she's mad that she's married to Kane. Or
well, you know, it's interesting
because she like, really wanted a Natalie Portman's pants because she was a lesbian.
What? Well, stop. what caused her to do this? What did she notice about Lena? Because basically.
Well, they were joking about her making out. They were joking about making her making a pass at her before they went into the shimmer.
Yeah, that's true, but it doesn't. They don't really explain Anya's motivation because
I think it's just she's just crazy, and that's just you know, and that's the only connection I can think of is that she kind of got denied whenever she kind of made a pass at Lena.
Maybe.
Maybe she, you know, since Lena, like, didn't, like, accept her advances.
Reciprocate.
Maybe she found out that, you know, she was married to Kane, and, oh, she didn't tell us. That's why, you know.
But
I'm sure, like, it's mostly supposed to be psychosis, but, I mean, like, for anything triggering that, that's the only thing I can think of, because nothing else makes sense. Other than it just being straight up psychosis, but I mean, psychosis has to have probably has some sort of reason. I mean, maybe it doesn't.
Yeah.
But I would say that if there is any reason behind it, it would have been the lack of reciprocation.
Yeah, I mean, you're probably right. It just bugged me that she went for the necklace, the locket that had Kane's picture in it, but she had no idea it was there. Like, she literally knocked everyone out to call Lena out.
Maybe she was like feeling her up, and then just found the thing. It's like, fuck, you're straight, man. Why are you straight?
Well, it was weird and unexplained in my eyes, and
it was unexplained in my eyes too. I'm just trying to make reasons.
Yeah, no, I accept your reasons, except for the lesbianic stuff.
That's the most obvious reason.
But
do you think it's a myth?
Well, while Josie and Dr. Ventress and Lena are all tied up and gagged,
she gets out a dildo. Heeny, meeny, miny, mo.
No. It does not turn into some crazy sex film, I promise.
Unfortunately.
Fortunately, it does not. But unfortunately, Anya hears Cass's voice. and
it's screaming.
She's like, basically, fuck you, Lena, you liar. And she runs past and, you know, Lena doesn't know what it is, but she's completely shocked. And she's like, no, trying to say, don't go. And then you hear Anya basically being ripped to shreds. And the bear comes in, and this bear...
Anya just kind of... I don't think Anya runs into the bear yet.
Yeah.
No, she doesn't. Because the bear comes in, and it walks around them, and makes all those horrible screaming noises in their face. Then Anya comes back in and shoots it. Then Anya gets her face ripped off.
Yeah, so she leaves the room, gets attacked by the bear. The bear comes in without her, and that's how she's able to come back in after it screams at them.
I don't know. I didn't think she got attacked. I thought she missed the bear.
Yeah, she starts screaming, and they all freak out, and they're all trying to be as quiet as possible because they can hear it coming.
And Lena's like, don't react. And the bear's just walking around them making these awful human screaming sounds out of its skeleton face.
Yeah, it almost kind of looked like, I don't know, like an anteater. Like, the skull of it just wasn't very bear-like. It was like a really big, like, badger or something. Like, it had a very long, bony structure of the front. It was creepy, but...
It's probably my favorite scene in the film.
Was it?
Yeah.
It was super uncomfortable for me. Not only, I think Anya took way too long. Like, the point was made. She was crazy, losing her shit, but it took way too long. It was very uncomfortable. And then this bear,
long. It's been too long.
And then this bear, like, thing comes in, and it's missing half of its face, and its screams, he basically, you know, when he tore Cassie apart, or she... tore Cassie apart.
It ripped at her throat, and so maybe the throat merged.
Yeah, basically the DNAs merged, and it was like screaming, "Help me!" And it was disturbing. It was really neat, but it was disturbing. And
it was disturbing. It was really weird, and that's it was probably one of the more unique things about the film. And it was the way it was disturbing, and that's probably why it was one of my favorite parts, because it was so different from the rest of the film. Because the rest of the film was kind of like, yeah, okay. I mean, like, it was kind of slow, but that's when I kind of really stood up and it got my attention again.
Yeah.
On my first viewing.
It's strange to me that a dead thing was living, because there's so much of nothingness inside the Shimmer that this dead thing, this zombified bear creature, was around. It was, I felt it was a little out of place.
It was weird.
Even though it was exciting for you, I was like, oh, it doesn't really fit with the world that they've created, but
it didn't make a lot of sense, but I mean, not much made a lot of sense.
Yeah. Well.
Like, why don't your main characters have last names, but the side characters do?
Right. Well, basically Anya comes back in and tries to kill it, and it goes after her, and then it goes after Lena again, and then
She just needs a little plastic surgery. She'll need like a new jaw. But she'll be fine.
Well, then Josie ends up taking the bear down, and you know, Anya's dead, and it's just Josie, the doc, and Lena left. And the next morning, it's, you know, you see just the Grove and Lena talking with Josie. And
because Ventress, you know, just heads on.
Yeah, she's like, you know, fuck this. I'm going to go take this thing down, and I'm going to fix this. And Lena's just like, I just want to get out of here. And Josie's like, you know, I don't want either of those things. And one of the things that's touched on earlier in the film is that basically Josie was a cutter, and she's okay with dying right now. And that's kind of what's conveyed in this scene, is that she's ready and she's not committed to taking this thing out. She's not committed to escaping. She's just ready to go. And if her body is going to change into, it's going to get refracted into her surroundings, she's going to go somewhere where at least she's going to evolve into something beautiful or hybridize or whatever. And
as she walks away, the vines start growing out of her.
Start coming out of her scars. Yeah, they start coming out of her scars on her arms, and she mutates.
She gets out of Lena's sight and is completely gone immediately. It's really fast transition.
Right.
She just accepted it.
Yeah, which kind of actually answers my, now that we're talking about that, it kind of answers my question earlier about how long it took for that guy's spine to get ripped apart.
It depends on how much he accepted it. maybe after he had the window cut in his belly, he's like, I'm just going to accept it.
That's probably when it came out of him and started to branch and stick him to the wall, and that's probably when it happened. But
probably. It could have been pretty quick.
Yeah. Selena realizes that she's alone, and she's like, oh, shit. Well, I guess I better, you know, her plan was to get to the lighthouse.
And take water back.
Not just because
that was the mission.
It was the mission, but she felt that the perimeter, she could breach the perimeter.
Much faster over water. She could escape
the perimeter much faster. Yeah, so that was her plan. So she goes on to the lighthouse, and I love the scene where she's walking toward the lighthouse. And I couldn't decide if the glass spires were supposed to be, like, icicles, or if they were supposed to be, like, sand when it's struck by lightning. But it was really fascinating.
It looked like crystal trees.
Yeah, they were like crystal trees, and it was so pretty. And she goes to the lighthouse, and she goes in, and there's a body, and it's sitting against the wall, and there's clearly a blast. Yeah, so all around him, and you can see his pack and his weapon and a camera staged to look at it. And Selena goes over, and she watches the film. And what you find out is that her husband Kane lost his mind, and he felt like he had lost so much of himself. He takes I can't remember what kind of grenade.
Incendiary, I think.
Okay. So he takes it, and he's like, he tells his story that he can remember because he can't remember much. And he's like, find Lena. And then a voice says, I will, or okay. And he pulls the pin and lets it go and incinerates himself. So, But the person who says okay walks
in front of the camera.
Around the camera in front of it, and you see Kane. That it's Kane. And you're like, that's the guy who came out of the shimmer.
Yes.
So there's this weird little blue geogue-like hole in the wall. And Lena's like, fuck it. My husband's dead. I'm probably going to die. I'm going in this hole.
it's my down. Hidey hole. I'm going to hide.
So she goes down into the hole, and she finds the doctor. But
Dr. Ventress. But it's not really Ventress.
Yeah, it wasn't the doc. But when you – I really want to ask the director why he did this. When she's looking away from Lena, you can see her face has no form.
Yes.
But – as soon as she turns around, her face is back.
Well, it's because she's the alien.
Yes, I know.
We don't know what happened to actual Ventress. Presumably, her body's in there somewhere, but I don't think we ever see it.
Well,
because the alien needs her DNA to take her form.
Yeah, but basically, the way that you figure out that it's the alien is the way he probably killed her. He probably just took her apart molecule by molecule. But
they didn't really say or specify, because as soon as Natalie Portman comes in, she turns into a dragon and starts spewing fire.
She's turned into a dragon.
She's spewing fire. She's the dragon.
What's curious is that, so right now, Lena's faced with the alien, and it looks like Dr. Ventress, but how, so...
It starts spewing
trying to figure out
fire and dubstep.
How to word this. Dubstep? Oh, my God.
Ventress starts spewing fire and dubstep and turns into this weird little pod eyeball thing.
I thought that the soundtrack for this scene was really cool.
My speakers on my computer that I was watching it on were awful, so it just was like really bad. It sounded like really bad dubstep.
Oh, well, sorry.
Yeah, I didn't get to watch it at home, unfortunately.
So yeah. Anyway, Dr. Ventress disintegrates into like a nebulous weird thing, and Lena had been cut on the face, and it kind of pulls her blood from her. Yeah, and then it pulls the blood into its center, and you start to see
blood replicate.
Mitosis. Yeah, you start to see the molecules dividing and replicating, and it forms a body, a being, and doesn't look like Lena, because I was expecting it to go straight to looking just like Lena, because it was her blood. But
I was expecting that too, but it holds this weird, tall, lanky alien, random-looking alien form for a really long time, and it's... And
yeah.
Natalie Portman shoots it.
Mirror. Well, so, yeah, that was really cool, actually, how they did that.
She shoots it and then runs, and then it's already waiting for her up at the top of the hole, the hidey hole.
Yep, yep, and it...
Mirrors all of her moves.
Mirror everything she does until she tries to escape, and then it like locks the door and
like it looks like it's trying to rape her, but it's kind of genital, so it's kind of weird.
Well, it was kind of strange.
At that's first, super like, uncomfortable.
Is it trying to absorb her or what? And you kind of figure it out in the end, but yeah, it was a little bit of an uncomfortable scene. And
it
then
it felt kind of rapey, even though it was like a formless alien.
Yeah, it did kind of feel a little rapey.
And then Natalie Portman comes and falls down on the ground and freaks out. And it looks like she just, like, passes out. But it looks like the alien's going to take a dump on her. And then it decides to lay down. Like, the way it's trying to lay down, it looks like he's squatting over her and, like, trying to take a dump for just a second. I was like, oh.
Yeah, that was...
Because she passes out and lays down. The alien decides to lay down and copy her. But just the way it squats down, it looks like he's going to, like, take a poop on her. And then he doesn't.
Well, it does that before the door thing, because when they
she tried to punch it and she fell down.
Yeah,
it knocked her down.
Yeah, and what I felt was interesting was that the alien kind of obviously it absorbed her DNA. They made sure to make it mimic her so well that it almost became like it. Took her mind.
Mm-hmm.
Do you know what I mean? And did everything at the exact same time that it knew Lena would do. And then that's when, like, they push off the wall and they fall down. And they literally, in a mirrored sense, fall next to each other. And Lena gets up and grabs the incendiary grenade. And
it starts to take on the form of Lena, finally.
As soon as it touched Lena's hand... Which I thought was weird because it was touching her at the door.
Raping her on the door and all that stuff, yeah. It was
and they were really fighting. Close. Yeah, but as soon as, I don't know, it was almost like a decision. Like, Lena was kind of lying to it, like, trying to get it to trust her. And, like, they both put their hands out, and she puts this grenade in its hands, pulls the pin, releases it, and then
runs.
Takes off and lights the alien on fire, basically, and
the alien's like, "Ooh, fire!" And it starts touching everything and lighting everything else on fire.
Yeah, it doesn't know what it is, so it.
So much. This is why I think it's an alien dingleberry, because it's not a very smart alien.
Well, I don't know. I mean, it's not touched on. There's a whole series of books. I'm sure you could find out.
But, and it sets the whole thing on fire, and it crawls back down in the hole and sets the hole on fire and all the stuff that's down there on fire, presumably Ventress's body we never saw.
Yeah, and then the spires,
the trees,
glass trees, collapse. Like, just like incinerate themselves and disappear. And so, the shimmer falls. The shimmer is no more. It's no longer existent. And I thought that was really interesting, but it also doesn't explain too much. Like, because those spires disappeared, does that mean everything that was modified, every refracting hybrid thing, did they all disintegrate or go back?
Or did they go back? Is Tessa Thompson going back to cutting herself since she's no longer a plant person?
Well, she'd probably be dead regardless, but it's just curious.
But we don't know.
Because... as soon as the shimmer falls, Kane wakes up and becomes lucid, and he's still not like remembering a lot of things, but
he's not dying anymore. So that's a plus.
But he's not dying anymore, which is also strange, but because he's, you know, he's actually not human. He's an alien. So why the fall of the shimmer, why that had an impact on him?
Why would that make
him
better? Well, maybe because he's outside of the shimmer. Maybe they need the shimmer to survive, and now there's no shimmer.
Perhaps.
It still doesn't make any sense.
Yeah, so they're still questioning Lena, and they finally tell her that her husband's awake, her husband, quote-unquote. And she's like, well, he's in quarantine. She's like, well, so am I. So they let her see him, and she walks in, and she's like, you're not him. And he's like, no, are you you? And she's like, yeah. And then he gives her a hug. And then...
I think she says, I don't know.
No, she says she's herself. And then they hug each other, which was weird. And but
you see the shimmer in his eyes, and then they show her, and you see the shimmer in her eyes.
Yeah, so he basically is his own shimmer now, and he just changed, I'm pretty sure, he just changed, rewrote her DNA to be one of him. I'm pretty sure.
Oh, that's interesting, because my coworker, we were watching it at work, actually, my coworker was like, she's an alien. I'm like, she's not an alien. She. We saw the alien die and burn up. And she's like, did we? I'm like, we had to have.
Why we did.
It was quite obviously the alien. And, yeah. And you know, they made the cuts. I think that's why the alien kept the alien form as long as it did. So we could never be confused on which one was...
Who was who.
I think that's why it kept the alien form for so long. So we could never lose track of, you know, or Lena. But, you know, also, it's an interesting way of interpreting it, that he turns her by touching her.
Mm-hmm.
That's interesting. But I just thought that she had merged with... Ventress a little bit because she had the tattoo, and then
I wanted to talk about the tattoo.
Yeah, she had the tattoo, and then she her DNA was rewritten because she was in the shimmer for so long. So I just thought it was just a byproduct of her being in the shimmer so long and interacting with the alien for so long that maybe without her touching her and without the end with the alien dying, that part of the alien went into her anyway.
Yeah, it's possible.
I mean,
you are what you're surrounded by. And she went into the main, the
craft,
the impact.
Yeah. I mean, the movie's super, super vague. And it basically ends with their eyes shimmering. And one thing that makes me really upset is the director knows this was a trilogy of books, went into the movie with no plans, and telling the studio and telling the actors that he has no plans on making the other ones. Why? Why would you do that? What's the point? Like, of making only a third of a story?
It could have been a conversation that he had with the author. The author was heavily involved in the production of the film.
I didn't realize that, why would you only adapt one? Like, why would you not adapt the entire story? That seems very odd to me. And the movie was really successful. I mean, I think it did really well.
Well, they weren't sure it was going to be. They were like, this is a group of female soldiers. And the biggest names they had were Jennifer Jason Leigh and Natalie Portman. And I mean, Oscar Isaac, obviously. But like, they weren't sure it was going to fly. You know, it's a very strange story. It's a thriller. I don't know how well thrillers do, but when it's all about mental fuckery, you know, if you, I don't know, give away too much in the first one, you lose momentum in the other ones. I don't know.
I just feel like it's strange that, like, I just was looking this up to find out what they were making the second one, the third one. And everything I could find when I was looking it up saying that he before it started, he has no interest. And now that it's become successful, he still has no interest. I'm just, why would you purposely set out to only tell a third of a story? It just doesn't make sense, especially since the movie ends so ambiguous.
Well, you know, if the director doesn't have to be the same director each time, network, but, you know, the company.
Studio.
Whether it's studio. Yeah. The studio can say, all right, you don't want to be part of it, then we're gonna give it to this guy, and that's fine. You know, not all of the Marvel films are made by the same guys, like, or gals.
Sure, but I don't know. I just feel like it's just kind of strange to start that and not have any intentions of continuing it. But he told the studio and the actors that, so I don't know if the actors, so they didn't sign the actors for three films who would be in more than one. You know what I mean? It's just kind of, it just lacks foresight.
Gotcha. Well, perhaps the sequel, maybe the sequels are like the same phenomenon, but not the same characters.
Maybe. I don't know. I don't know anything about the books. So what are your main takeaways on this film, Holly?
Well, you know, I found it very interesting that the theme of this film was self-destruction, because I didn't really get that. I didn't really pick up on that. All of the members who go into the Shimmer are basically signing up for a suicide mission. And the whole point of the film is supposed to be about why we are self-destructive and then how we hold ourselves accountable. And, you know, Alina cheated on her husband, Kane, and
the guy she cheated with was also cheating on his wife.
Yeah, yeah. Which I, you know, you find out later on that
Kane
the guy who she was cheating on is also a professor at the college, and he and his wife have been trying to get Lena to come out since her husband's disappearance and to come over and do things. So it was unclear until, like, very near the end whether or not this affair had happened while Kane was gone or before Kane left. And it turned out that it was before. And so the...
Because Kane knew about it.
Right. So the repercussion of her self-destructive behavior was that Kane also decided to be self-destructive and go on this suicide mission, because they're fully briefed before they take the mission. So he didn't have to go, but he did. So I didn't really pick up on that.
Yeah,
maybe, you know?
Yeah, he felt his life was over because she had cheated on him, and, you know, and she felt guilty that she drove him away like that. And
right. And the whole point is, like, why do we do this to ourselves? And, you know, the Dr. Ventress had cancer, and she just didn't give a fuck if she died. But she wanted to figure this out, and she wanted to save the world. And I can't remember what was wrong with Anya or Cass, but, you know, Rosie was a cutter.
Yep.
There's a scene right after the alligator where they take some boats and they go downstream, and that's how they get so far along. But, you know, she tells Lena why everyone's there, and then she asks Lena why she's there, and, you know, this was an opportunity for Lena to talk about her husband, but she doesn't.
Did not take it.
But yeah, you know, that's another why, you know, did she do that on purpose? Was omitting the truth another self-destructive thing that she did? And the repercussion of that was Anya losing her shit. Like, you know, so I personally didn't pick up on that. I only figured that out by watching the special features, and I was like, huh, that makes sense now.
Yeah, I watched some analytics of the movie just to kind of supplement my knowledge of the film, because I was only able to sort of half focus on it. The analytical things are shorter, so I was like, oh, okay, that makes sense. And the self-destructive thing was very interesting, and the concept of annihilation in itself is self-destructive. And that's why, you know, the alien is, you know, pushing against her. Like, it's a self-destructive thing, just reflecting her own self-destructivism by, like, resisting so much.
Yeah.
And it's very interesting. It's very interesting. Like I said, I didn't care for it very much the first time, but then, like, the bear scene really caught my eye, and the alien stuff at the end was really interesting. And then noticing how she spoke in the interview in the flash forwards versus how Kane spoke whenever he shows up at the house. It's all very interesting, and how there's lots of little parallels. And I think that, you know, I do need to rewatch this movie again and just give it all my whole attention and not be sidetracked on it, because I definitely will pick up more things. And it's definitely a layered film, lots of nuance in this film. And that's good. And it's interesting. I like science fiction that makes you think, and you can, you know, have stuff that you'll catch again and again as you rewatch it.
Right.
And you don't get that very much nowadays. A lot of times what you see is what you get, and it's kind of like, meh.
Yeah. It's very forgettable, and you just, like, okay, that was exciting. Maybe. But Annihilation, yeah, you know, it wasn't really action-packed, but it definitely had depth. And visually, I thought it was beautiful. They did an amazing job with their effects and the writing, you know, the team even, you know. The person who plays Anya, the one who loses her shit, is the actress who plays Jane the Virgin, which I've never seen, but I recognize her. And, you know, it's like the team works really well together, but they're all from so many different places, like backgrounds, that it was surprising but awesome.
Yeah. I mean, I kind of wish they would have gone a little bit more into the psychosis, like, of why they went crazy, especially when Anya goes crazy, because it just feels like, oh, the shimmer makes you lose your mind. So she's crazy. I wish I've kind of gone into it a little bit more.
I wish, yeah, like,
and especially with the soldier team, that could have been more interesting, other than just showing off like a horrific scene of getting a stomach window. Like, if they were talking about stuff and like getting their theories on what was going on, that could have been a little bit more interesting.
Well, this is the first team that are actually scientists. Everyone else has been dominantly
military.
So,
but they can give their uneducated. They can give their uneducated theories. I mean, uneducated theory is still something. And,
right.
And they could they could have made the scientists do something where, like, oh, they're trying to figure out what they're trying to say in a scientific way, since they're not necessarily scientists. You know what I mean?
Well, yeah, you're right. But it would have definitely helped if, you know, those small things were more explained, like why one person would, why their DNA would overwrite and they would lose their mind quicker than the rest, and why Elena was so strong when everybody else was,
Lena was so strong and resistant to it because she had a reason to get out. No one else had a reason to get out. Everyone else was self-destructive, 100% self-destructive. And because Kane had gotten out and it was her husband,
her motives were about somebody else, about fixing him, not her
ultimate demise, where everyone else was like kind of like they didn't really care.
Right.
I mean, you know, if you're Anya and you know, Natalie Portman turns you down, it's not much to live for anymore. I mean, it's Natalie Portman. Although, speaking of Natalie Portman, I did think it was weird that old Star Wars and new Star Wars were having sex a lot.
What?
Oscar Isaac is Poe Dameron in episode 7 and 8. And then she's episode 1 and 2 and 3. I'm like, that's weird. New Star Wars is having sex with old Star Wars. It's really weird.
That is kind of funny.
Yes. The things that go through my mind when I watch a movie is it's like, old Star Wars and new Star Wars are having sex. That's weird.
This is why you have to watch movies more than once.
Yes, because I get distracted by Star Wars actors having sex with each other. I'm like, that's weird.
You start thinking about lesbionic tendencies and...
I mean, yeah, sure, but it wasn't... It was in the movie. She was hitting on her.
I guess.
You didn't read between the lines?
I didn't have to. I mean, they came out and said it, but I just kind of accepted it. So I didn't really think about it.
You accepted it, but you're making fun of me for pointing it out? Sure, thanks. That's some double standard for you.
I don't think I'm making... am I making fun of you for pointing it out? My mind just didn't go there. I'm not making fun. I guess it's funny to me, but I'm not... If your mind goes there, your mind goes there. I mean,
what do you mean? How does explain to me?
So my brain didn't go to jealous wannabe girlfriend.
Oh,
but,
it's just because you said that it was plain as day. Then it sounded like you were denying it. I'm like, what? Which is it?
Well, I mean, I wouldn't say it's plain as day. I mean, she gave me the impression of bisexuality because she was like, hey, considering how much time we have, I can't really be picky or something like that. You know, that gave me the sense of a bisexual nature, not of a simply women driven sexuality. So it happened and I accepted it and we moved on. So I didn't really, that's just not where my brain went, I guess.
Oh, maybe I just dwell on things that get me excited.
But you know what? Sometimes, like, I'm sure the listeners know, like, you and Aaron will say something and I won't get it for, like, 5 seconds. And I'm like, I get it. I see that now. Because my brain takes it as, like, direct. And then I have to think about it. I'm like, oh, they were being dirty. I get it.
Yes. We got to get you caught up on the dirty, dirty talk, because that way we'll be more cohesive as a team.
I don't know about that.
we're rubbing off on you. It'll just be a matter of time.
Oh, I've been known to be quite pervy minded. However, voicing the pervy mindedness to the world of listeners out there is not something I really want to do.
Oh, come on.
I know. It's just, I know, but I just, it's like, you know, when I drive past kids.
Are you trying to be, are you trying to run for president one day and you don't want this to haunt you? Is that your reasoning?
No, I'm not. but it's just like my nature, you know, when I drive by somebody's kids and I'm blasting music, even if it's like opera or something that has no words, I always turn it down just because you don't know what people want their kids to hear. It's just my nature. I don't know. I'm voicing that kind of.
You say fucking, so you can say whatever you want.
I do. I do say the F word. I used to only say F word in that context. F word. I did for a long time, and sometimes I still do. I'm sure you've heard me say F word.
Yes. Also, fun fact that the more Holly drinks, the more she swears. So it's pretty fun.
That is true. And sometimes I go into accents, and I can't get out. I fall into an accent hole.
An accent hole.
I'm stuck there.
Those are super deep, like that alligator's maw. Did you have a favorite scene in the film other than the lesbian one that didn't happen? That was my favorite one. But then the bear happens. That was pretty cool. That was a good second thing.
Actually, my favorite part about the whole movie was when Natalie Portman takes down the gator. Just the conviction of her as an actress, you know, she went into full military mode and I was like so excited for her. Like, it gave me chills and I had permagran and I was so excited. That was it. It didn't last long, but that was my favorite part. I know that's probably stupid, but I enjoy movies for the experience of the filmmaking. So that made me very excited. Are you sticking with the bear?
Yeah, the bear screaming with the shepherd's voice is probably my favorite scene because it's so creepy and so well done and something I totally wasn't expecting for this film for how slow. Because, like I said, I was having a hard time really getting into it the first time, and that really, really like brought my attention back to the film where I kind of started tuning things back out. I was like, oh, this is neat.
Right.
It's not something I was expecting, and it was like kind of horrifying and just straight up weird.
Yeah.
And it was a good kind of weird. It wasn't just weird for the sake of weird. It was interesting.
Well, we have to talk about the tattoo.
Yes.
Because I noticed the tattoo between the different flashbacks.
They don't show it on the first in the intro. They show it later on in the film. Like, she's kind of has her arm twisted, so you don't see it the first time. But then later, she's got her arm twisted the other way, so you do see it.
Right, and like piecing together the time frame of everyone, like the guy who they cut open had the tattoo, and one of the female scientists also had the tattoo, and between the time that they were in the area with the flowers and the end of the movie, she somehow acquires this tattoo. And I don't understand. It's not explained. I don't know if it's the alien DNA rewritten stuff or what. Or did they lose their minds and give themselves tattoos?
So much is not explained. So much is unaccounted for in the film. It's really difficult to know. Because, I mean, I thought that was an interesting choice to have the first day we see them in the Shimmer. It's already days later. So we see them cross the barrier, then it's days later, just all of a sudden. And it just, it was weird that that's how they decided to go with it.
I'm sure it has a lot to do with how the book is actually written.
Probably. But I'm sure they cut tons of stuff out for the film, too. So I'm sure the book has got more into it and keeps better track of time. But then you were saying that the guy didn't write names for the characters, so maybe he didn't keep better track of time in the books. I don't know.
he talks about it in the special features for Annihilation, and it's not a lack of thought. It's that he was having such a hard time deciding the gender. He didn't want to give first names. But yeah, it was a good movie. I you know, a lot happens. And like I said, I didn't pick up on what they were trying to sell, but it was still a good movie. It was still beautifully done, and I thought it was interesting enough to keep you, you know, or at least keep me tuned to the television.
Well, the thing is, I was at work, so I had to, like, I had stuff I actually had to take care of, so it was not the best place to watch.
Gotcha.
A movie with that requires intense deep focus. I just didn't have time to watch it at home the entire week, so I half watched it twice at work.
Gotcha, gotcha. Well, but I thought ultimately it was a good movie, and I'm curious. I really want to know. I know we won't do a show on it, but I really want to know what Aaron felt about it.
Maybe it'll be a lost episode. Who knows?
Lost episode.
Or maybe we can just quickly get his thoughts at the beginning of next time we have him on, just to see what he thought, just up front.
Yeah, that might be fun. I don't really know that we didn't touch on anything. I think we touched on everything.
Yeah, I mean, we got the synopsis, we got, you know, our thoughts, and then talked about the theme of self-destruction. And it's an interesting theme for a film. I just wonder if the second two films, or the second two books, become it's the same focus, or how it turns out. And I do hope they make the other two books into movies, because that'd be interesting to have the entire story.
Yeah.
In film. I mean, I'm a fan of completing things, and I felt that it was very strange that they were just kind of like, nope, we're just going to make the first one because reasons. I'm like, okay.
I mean, if you saw this film and you had no idea that there were sequels, can you accept it the way it is?
I mean, I guess you kind of have to, but it leaves so much undefined and like, what's going on, and because I know there's more to it, I'm a little bit upset that they're not gonna finish the story. I'm just like, I guess I could just read the books. I mean, that'll probably be better anyway. But
so because you know that there's more to the story, you can't really accept this as a complete film.
No, it ends so ambiguously. Like, we don't know much anything about it. They're just together again, and he's an alien for sure, and she is maybe an alien, half an alien, quarter of an alien, who knows? Or she's just changed by the shimmer. And that's just how she'll be. And then, you know, they could have children and they could, you know, pass it on, and then their children become aliens. And I don't know. I don't know what the story becomes like going further, but it just seems like since the shimmer's gone, they're the last two with it. So it would have to pass on through them unless the shimmer's not actually gone.
You know, I don't know.
Or another Dingleberry falls and starts all over again.
You know, I guess I just see it a little differently. I see it as a complete film, actually. And I don't think it came here on purpose, but it's doing what it knows. And I think it's going to continue to fuck with people's DNA until the entire population is altered.
How is it going to do that when it's gone?
Obviously by touch.
Oh, so they're just going to like, the two of them are just going to be patient zero, and they're just going to like pass it on.
Yeah. I mean, that's pretty much how every apocalyptic thing happens when it comes to, you know, zombies.
Yeah, that could work. Yeah. It'd be interesting.
It's just very, it's a daunting ending. It's like okay, the world's fucked.
Well,
it's basically how I saw it. They could try and keep them in quarantine, and they would probably succeed, you know. But if they succeed in keeping them quarantined for the rest of their lives, I mean, who knows how long they'll live if they're both genetically and, you know, changed or foreign or alien. I mean, so to me, it felt like a complete film, not expecting more. Obviously, when I watched it, I didn't know there were other stories in the saga. But who knows?
I started researching it before I watched it, and I found out that it was a first part of I found it was based on books. And I looked up, there was like three books, or maybe there's more, but I know there's at least three books for the series. And so then I looked up if they were supposed to be making another one before I even watched the film. And then when I found out he is dead set against making sequels, I was like, kind of, maybe that colored my expectation of the movie too. Because when I heard it was a multi-part story and they're only making the first part, maybe that colored my expectations of it because I went in knowing that he wasn't going to do any more and there was no expectations they would make more. So maybe that colored my experience of the film by knowing that there was supposed to be more and there may not be.
Did they only do the first book or did they blend the stories together and make one complete story?
As far as I know, it's just an adaptation of the first book.
Hmm.
And adaptions, I mean, a lot of stuff is missing or cut out or different because film and books are rarely the same.
Mm-hmm.
As far as like for a complete one-to-one transition.
Well, I don't know, man.
I don't know either, but it'll be interesting. I do hope they get a different director and they do adapt the other two because I would love to see how it all comes together and what significance of the whole story is and how it interlinks, if it builds, if the theme is different. I would like to find out all this, and you know, I guess I could just get the books too, but I like movies. I would love to see them come about. And it was a movie I was excited about. I just never got to see it in the movie theater.
Yeah.
Just busy life and whatever. So, but it was a movie I was excited for. I thought it was an interesting concept, and the preview looked interesting. And I like Natalie Portman, so I'm like, yeah, let's see this. And glad Aaron pitched it, and hopefully the listeners are enjoying our take on something not Star Trek. And we'll be definitely getting back to Star Trek next week. So don't fear.
I love that all of the side trails you guys take when it's a movie that's not Star Trek is always science fiction.
Yeah.
I love that.
Yeah, we like talking about science fiction. So, you know, at least the podcast has at least that common thread. If it's not Star Trek, it's still science fiction for the most part.
Mm-hmm. I'd be interested to hear what the listeners' favorite non-Star Trek science fiction films or books are.
Yeah, sound off.
That would be interesting.
Yeah, sound off in the show. And I was speaking with Philip, one of our listeners, and he's on the Facebook group. He mm-hmm. actually gave us a really good feedback for last week's episode. It was great. Mm. It was great seeing that. It's on that post. I responded to him. I sent him responded to the post, and I gave him a private message. And Aaron made a joke on the post. Because he thought we were beating a dead horse, and everyone's like, you could say we molested it. I didn't see if there's any other post on after that, but Philip said he's a big fan of this film, Annihilation, and was excited to hear our thoughts on it. And one thing he did pitch to me was that he really likes our themed episodes, or like our Suffering Over Brian episodes and our Spotting Dax episodes. So mm-hmm. what I want to throw out to all of the people listening is, do you enjoy those themed episodes where we kind of dial in on a single character? And what other character would you like us to kind of dial down on as a doing themed episodes? Or it doesn't even have to be a character. Is there a theme that you guys would like to hear about? Let us know in the emails. You can email us at syntholics@yahoo.com or let us know in the Facebook group, facebook.com/group/syntholics. These are always great ways to get a hold of us. You can even send us private messages. I love getting messages from people who listen to the show and just say, hey, look, listen. And, you know, that way I won't be like, oh, who's this? That'd be nice. But all our music is provided by Warp 11, except for our intro. That's by Dave Wilkes. The show you can find online at syntholics.com. Again, the email's at syntholics@yahoo.com. And if you want to tweet at us, you can tweet at the show at syntholicduo. Personally, I'm David_J_Duncan. Aaron's at Blackbird2004 and Holly's at Lunar Thistle. The Patreon, if you want to support the show, you can go on Patreon, patreon.com/syntholics. There was a buck or two. I mean, it just helps out the show, especially if we lose a piece of hardware, just because I bought this hardware over 3 years ago. Actually, we're coming up on our fourth year anniversaries in March.
Jeez.
It'll be 4 years that we've been doing the show, and so the equipment gets old, so anything y'all can throw our way that'll help keep the show going, if you think we deserve it, it's a token of
appreciation.
Absolutely, it would be a huge help to us. Also, if that, you know, we understand that that's not a possibility, you can always go on iTunes and or I guess it's Apple Podcasts now, and rate and give us a rating and review. That helps us get seen in the algorithm. And you know, tell a friend. Go door to door. Whatever strikes your fancy.
Don't go door to door.
It works for the Mormons. Let's get Syntholics going on there.
But the Mormons don't knock on the door and say, knock knock, it's a butthole. And we're putting things in it.
Hey.
I feel like that's something you and Aaron have probably said before.
Hey, you lead with the Star Trek and then the funny parts, and then you get to the perverted. You don't start with the perverted stuff and you knock on the door. Unless you know your neighbor's into that. You lead with what you want. But,
Don't tell your granny.
Tell your granny. Tell your grampy. Tell your aunts and your uncles. Tell your coworkers about the good news of Synthaholics. tell them how embarrassed Holly gets when we talk about sex stuff. It's great.
It's terrible.
She loves it so much. That's why she's whispering all sexy in my ear. Well, thank you all so much for listening. Live long and prosper, one and all. Before the night's over, I'll puke in the sink, and we'll cry till we laugh, and we'll both shit our pants. You're the best drinking friend I ever had. Woohoo!
Oh my goodness.